Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to take about 3.5 minutes to make our listening audience aware, in case any of you are not, of not only the books that I have authored, but some articles that I have written that you might be interested in, and tell you how to access them. In my broadcast, some of you have noticed that you hear very little about financial support, and that's deliberate. We really trust God here on that score and firmly believe that God pays for what He orders. The same policy is true in my local church ministry. Other than the teaching we offer on these broadcasts, over the years I have done a good deal of writing, as time allows, to prepare resources that I think should be helpful to my congregation and also helpful to you, our listeners. But on this program, I don't say a lot about those resources, much as I don't say a lot about finances, and I guess that omission in terms of resources kind of defeats the purpose. So grab a pen and paper and get prepared to write down a website. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there information describing the 5 books I have authored, one of them co-authored with my daughter. In fact, that book, The Finality of Jesus Christ, is not a long book, but it's a very important book, and if anybody will let the Scriptures answer their questions about whether there are many ways to God, this will be decisive. Another very important book I've written is Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times. I've written a book on marriage. Should help a lot of people if both are serious about walking with God in their marriage, Marriage Without Remorse, Rules for the Road. Another book, A Life Worth Dying For, The Radical Meaning of Christian Excellence. Personally, I love that book. It's my heartbeat. And finally, one about the pastoral ministry would be good for elders and leaders, too. Dispatches from the Front Lines, Reflections on the Glory and Grind of Pastoral Ministry. On top of that, on the same website, you'll see a tab that says Articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there are some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, the most recent article is my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice. After all, that has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, back to our current study. We continue with our new study of the book of Proverbs. We're in Proverbs chapter 1. We've just focused intently on Proverbs 1:5. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wisdom. And then the major motif of the book of Proverbs, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. We'll pick up now with verse 8. In Proverbs 1:8-19, we hear this admonition. A father to a son, hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, like the grave, even whole, as those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious wealth. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us, and we shall all have one purse, share and share alike. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, son, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. Conclusion, so are the ways of everyone who gains by violence and takes away the life of its possessors. The young not only youths are warned here and elsewhere against the temptation of seeking the good life and joining the lap of luxury by taking the easy route rather than by earning their way in life. They're urged to join bad company that share the same bad ambitions. There are always those who operate on the philosophy that to get what you want, one must be bold and ruthless, and that's the picture here. Hey, the theory is you only go around once, right? And so they think that if God didn't mean for sheep to be fleeced, he would not have made so many of them. So whether it is joining a gang or a drug operation or a crime cartel or a white-collar rip-off scheme or just mugging people in dark alleys, the Proverbs warn that there will always be people out there in every culture and every generation with their get-rich-quick schemes, folk who are willing, if necessary or just for pleasure, just for the love of violence, to commit mayhem or murder to gain their evil ends. Well, Solomon warns us that is the path of self-destruction, and let anyone who has ears, let them hear. In the end, it all comes back like a boomerang to take away the life of those who are in the habit of taking away what belongs to others. So are the ways of everyone, verse 19, who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Let those who have ears hear. How often have we seen that in bad economies, as the lives of the greedy have fallen apart on the right hand and on the left? Not just the greedy, but many of the greedy. How many high flyers have we seen in the news who ripped off others, and now are effectively dead behind prison bars or on the lam? One such guy took off in his own private plane, tried to, I suppose, fake a plane crash. He bailed out, had a motorcycle hidden away somewhere, tried to flee. I guess he was going to try to leave the country and have people think he was dead. I don't know what the guy's plan was. But his whole life was falling apart, and he had a desperate plan to try to hide all of the hurt and pain that he'd left behind him, and he ruined his life. And he's not the only one. Well, here in chapter 1, verses 8 through 19, is a picture of the folly of a life of heartless rapacity and criminal audacity. This is nothing new. People choose to go that way. But eventually Solomon reminds us the chickens come home to roost amid all the poop. In the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, we hear again and again the voice of wisdom crying out and beckoning any who will listen to benefit from her rich gifts, and warning those who will not listen of a day of reckoning for their heedlessness. Wisdom shouts in the streets, verse 20. She lifts up her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates of the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity, naivety, How long will scoffers delight themselves in scoffing and fools hate knowledge? Witness pleads with the heedless. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you, the spirit of wisdom, the spirit of understanding, the spirit of counsel and prudence is the idea. I will make my words known to you. We'll stop right there. The point here is that the wisdom of God does not hide itself from those with ears to her voice. It reminds me of James 1:5. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. In James, you find many echoes of the Proverbs, and I think James is echoing the spirit of these verses right here. The idea is that God makes his wisdom available to those who really seek it. God is always ready to enlighten those with ears to hear, eyes to see, hearts to obey. Those who truly seek wisdom, let me stop right there. I have to emphasize that when we're talking about wisdom in the Proverbs, we're talking not just about practical wisdom. We are talking about that. But we're talking about wisdom in its full-bodied sense, godly wisdom, of the kind that enables one to live smart at the temporal level, but also to live prudently in the eyes of God. We're talking about a wisdom that is not only street smart, but a wisdom that is full, pulsating with the fear of God, that is, reverential submission to God's will. Well, those who truly seek wisdom will find it coming to meet them in the concourses of everyday life. In short, what Solomon is telling us, you don't have to go off to some monastery or to some desolate desert or high mountain retreat to find it. You don't have to go to some exotic place. God will readily make it available to you. Wisdom cries out in the streets to the naive. Turn in here, listen, I will teach you. How long? Verse 22, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? How long will scoffers delight themselves in scoffing and fools hate knowledge? All those words are roughly in the same semantic circle of meaning. You can pretty much understand one by understanding the other. Naive ones, scoffers, fools. Scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, fools hate knowledge. Naive ones love simplicity. But not simplicity in the good sense, but naivety. Turn to my reproof, and behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you. I will make my words known to you. Mockers are the proud and arrogant, who are full of insults, hatred, and strife, who resist correction, even though they deserve flogging. I took that from an NIV note. That's pretty much on the button. They are, by definition, mockers, fools. And fools, by definition, despise knowledge. But knowledge doesn't mean the knowledge of history or the knowledge of physics, though maybe that too, but not necessarily. Or the knowledge of economics or the knowledge of biology or sociology or psychology or whatever. In fact, they may be avid in their pursuit of knowledge of mathematics or whatever. But when it says fools, by definition, despise knowledge, in the biblical compass, that means they despise preeminently the knowledge of God, the knowledge of His will and His ways, and that understanding of life which flows from the knowledge of God, His will and His ways. These subject matters are not matters which detain them or drive them. In fact, they are all wise in their own eyes. That's one of the hallmarks of a fool. One of the hallmarks of mockers. It's not that fools can't ever learn, but to the extent that they can get it, it is typically too late for a timely reversal of attitudes and behaviors. The opportunity has passed them by. Verse 24, because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hands, I was there. Wisdom says, personified, but really this is the spirit of wisdom, which is the spirit of God. I called, you refused, I stretched out my hand, I beckoned you, but no one was paying attention. You neglected all of my reproof, wisdom says, to the fool, to the mocker, to the naive. You did not want my reproof. I don't want to hear all of that. Well, I will even laugh at your calamity, and I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then, oh yeah, then they will call upon me. It's too late. I will not answer. Then they will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. And again, when it says they hated knowledge, we're not talking about the university disciplines, the academic disciplines, but we're talking about the knowledge of God. They did not choose the fear of the Lord, reverential submission to God. They weren't up for that. That did not detain them. That did not drive them. By the time they figured out that they'd been all wrong and all wet, and some never do, but if some do figure out that they've wasted their lives, the trouble is, it's virtually over. They're at death's door. By the time they figure out that their lives, as they've conducted them in their folly, are empty, and that their pursuits are futile and vain and worthless, it's too late to reverse their field. By the time they figure out that something matters besides themselves, they probably have so many enemies they can't even repair the damage. They can't unwind it all. It's too late. They may, eventually, get it figured out and regret it all. But it's a day late and $100 short. The thing about wisdom, we learn here, is that wisdom will not cast her pearls before a self-destructing swine. You remember Jesus told us, do not cast your pearls. Your pearls are wisdom. Don't cast them before self-destructing swine, mockers, fools. They don't appreciate pearls. What do swine know about pearls? What do they know about their value? What do they know about their beauty? They will just trample on them and maybe rend you in the process. So wisdom will give way to the fool's love of folly. And in the end, wisdom will have her own laugh at its stupidity. As dismal and terrible as folly is, there's an absurd aspect to folly that sometimes makes it almost comical to anyone who is in possession of a modicum of wisdom. You just wonder how anybody could even conceive of such a stupid idea. This is reminiscent of Psalm chapter 2, verse 4, where the Lord who sits in the heavens laughs at puny man who conspires to overthrow his king and his plans. It's about as silly and laughable as a swarm of ants conspiring to stop a herd of elephants. The funny thing about folly is that the stupidity of it doesn't usually show up immediately. That's what Proverbs chapter 1, verse 25 and following is talking about. You neglected all my counsel and you did not want my reproof. So I'll have the last laugh, wisdom says. I will mock when your dread comes. You mock me, then I will mock you. When your dread comes, get this, like a storm, and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come on you, then they will call upon me, but it'll be too late. I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. You can't pick your own times. Wisdom is always there for those who have ears, unless they wait too long. And then it's too late. It will not be there. In time, the consequences of human folly have a way of reaching critical mass. The folly of stupidity, as I say, usually doesn't show up immediately. But in time, it builds. And then it reaches critical mass, and suddenly, like a dam breaking, all the delayed consequences just come together, and then there is calamity. Again, the chickens have come home to roost, and everybody's standing around wringing their hands and wondering what went wrong all of a sudden. Wisdom always gets the last word in God's moral world. Folks, in the end, we're told here, in different words, that people will reap what they sow. We will eat what we plant. Listen to verse 30. They would not accept my counsel. They, the fools, the mockers, they spurned all my reproof, wisdom says. So, they shall eat of the fruit of their own way. They will be satiated with their own devices. For here's the way life works. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. And we've seen this to some extent already in our American life. The complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me will live securely and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. Oh my, in the end, people will reap what they sow. They will eat what they plant. Somehow we've got the idea that's not the case. But God's word, God's wisdom, tells us it is the case. And let any who have ears, let them hear. Our folly will come back to haunt us. But for the grace and mercy of God, and our waywardness, our departures from the ways of God, will one day in some way waylay us, and our smug complacency, our smug American complacency that knows no fear of God, will at the end of the day destroy us. We'd better be paying attention. It has been true of every nation on earth. The survival of so-called great empires has been roughly about 200 years. We need to wake up. And if it doesn't catch up with us in the compass of this temporal life, certainly it will on the other side of time. Here's the bottom line. There is no way to marry folly without living to regret it, and we will die to pay for it. But here's the comfort. But he who listens to me, listens to wisdom, listens to the wisdom of God, listens to the Spirit of God, listens to the Word of God, he who listens to me shall live securely and be at ease from the dread of evil. Now keep in mind, these are generalizations. We went over this in the introduction. It is true as far as its truth intention. The fact is, walking in the way of divine wisdom, folks, it has a comforting effect on those who listen to wisdom. When we know that we have done the wise and prudent thing, however hard the choice may have been at the time, you know, that engenders confidence in us toward God and a sense of security in how things will turn out. Just to know that the Lord is not only on your side, but at your side in tough circumstances, well, it has a calming effect and it eases our fear of injury. It goes far to helping us sleep at night just to know that we're aligned with the wisdom of God in the way that we've lived our lives. Even if the present takes a piece out of us, boy, it has, there is this feeling that even if we lose a battle, in the end we know we're going to win the war. Now, that's not to say we're an anxiety-free zone. We're human, and that spells some considerable emotional frailty. This is a generalization. Sometimes the stakes in our decisions are incredibly high, and we fret over some more than others. But those who do the right thing, who listen to the voice of wisdom, who take counsel from the Lord and trust His way in hard choices, well, we stand a better chance of sleeping and feeling secure than those who don't. We are not immune in our emotional weakness to sleepless nights. I know that for sure. But the more we trust in God's ways than in folly, we are far less susceptible to those sleepless nights. And that's the point. Well, thank you, friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.